Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 17 of Junk Rares. This is the Magic the Gathering podcast where we're going to be talking about what's going on in the multiverse. We're going to be talking about playing Commander and how to do that on a budget. I am one of your hosts, Jeffrey Daniel.
And right next to him, Tyler Nichols.
So we had a pretty eventful week and weekend.
Yeah, even more than that. I mean, it's been about 10, 12 days since last episode?
Yeah, about a week and a half, yep.
I mean, we had a lot going on, though, so we had a lot to figure out what was going in the podcast and what wasn't, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for those of you who listened to the last episode, and, well, I guess for those of you who didn't, but, yeah, this the weekend of the 18th and 19th, we were at Star City Games Open Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of us was playing in the Open, as neither one of us are standard players.
True.
But, I mean, just a lot of magic things going on, and took us a little extra time to cut down what was going in, still reconcile Commander and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, it was a good weekend. I had a blast.
I definitely did, too. It was a very long weekend.
Yes.
Very long.
Especially Sunday. We got there by 8, didn't leave until, like, 7:38.
Yeah.
12 hours in the same event hall. You get tired by the end.
You definitely do. And then the hour and a half drive home.
Yeah.
It's just,
Good time, though. I mean, yeah.
Definitely.
95% good time.
I got a giant muffin.
I'm
pretty nice.
Sure. But yeah, I guess we'll touch on the bad 5% later.
Sure.
Okay.
I don't like when people touch on my bad 5%, but, you know.
Gross.
All right, let's kick this off with random Commander, as always.
Oh, for sure, dude.
Let's see what we get.
All right.
Rolling the dice.
Here we go.
Come on. The internet is really bad. What is
Damn.
This?
Damn.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
How do you... Lin Sivi, Defiant Hero. I actually like this card.
Yeah?
I don't know how much there is to, like, go with it. But, anyways. One white for a 1/3. Creature, Human Rebel Legend. She has two abilities. X and tap her. Search your library for a rebel card with CMC X or less. And put that card into play. Then shuffle your library. Or for just three colorless, put target rebel card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library.
Okay, so that's cool. So if you have a rebel that died, you can pay three, put it on the bottom, then
and
pay
you
X
can still,
and
like,
tap it.
Tutor it up, yeah.
Sure. Sure. So I know with Rebels, their whole thing was you can pay an amount of mana. So you can pay like 3 mana and tap to go look for a Rebel that costs 2 and put it in your hand. Like, I think that was a very big thing. Or like you could pay 4 and tap it and tutor up a Rebel that costs 3.
Well, I'm looking at a lot of them. Like, here's a 3 drop that taps for 5.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they all put them into play.
Oh, do they go into play? Okay.
Yeah, search your library for a rebel card with CMC4 or less and put it into play.
Okay.
But, like, do any of them do anything other than just go get other rebels?
You know, this one, you can sacrifice him to destroy a black creature. You know?
Tap, sack, exile a red creature from the game. Tap, sack, remove a black creature from the game.
Sure. Sure.
Like, I'm not even seeing, like... like a lord. Like, other rebels you get +1/+1. Like...
No.
Sure. It just looks like I would rather just play my soldier deck.
That's fair. But, I mean, given these guys... If you have a way to give these guys haste in white, that could seem pretty
cool. Which I'm pretty sure you don't.
Yeah, I mean... Sure.
In Mono White.
Sure. I don't know.
It's weird. This is the tribe I decided that I like, so I'm going to play this tribe.
More or less. And I think that's really what it has to be. I don't think anyone's going into this deck because it seems so good. And, like, I think really just if you like Rebels.
Like, all these Rebels go get other Rebels, but then I feel like he's like, look at all my Rebels! What do? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't... You just
because a lot of their power toughness aren't even, like, good for the curve because they have these abilities to go tutor up other, like, other ones.
Yeah.
Like...
You just play like, all these out?
Cho Mono, like, a 4-drop 2-2 that just... You prevent all damage that be dealt to him. Like, sure, but, like... That's, like, budget indestructible, I feel like.
Yeah.
So he's not going to die in combat, but, like, kill spells still just straight kill him.
Yeah, and that's the one that doesn't even have the tutor effect.
Yeah, and he's a 4-drop 2-2 with budget indestructible. Like, that's just gross.
Yeah. I think
bad gross.
You probably just you play these Slam Coat of Arms. I mean, sure.
I mean, fair. I think I'm going to stick with my soldier deck.
That's fair. That's fair. If you like Rebels, like, I would suggest Coat of Arms. That's
like if I'm playing... I don't know. I just feel like with things that tutor up specific creatures, I feel like I would just have more fun playing... granted, it's way more expensive way of doing this, but Captain Sisse.
Fair.
Tap, tutor a legendary creature. Like, yeah.
But at the same... Okay. I do have to say, though, it probably feels pretty good tapping Lin Sivi for, like, 6. You get a 6-drop. Your next turn, use that 6-drop to get a 5-drop and all the way down. That probably feels pretty good.
That's a lot of mana.
That is a lot of mana. And it's a lot of time. But you know what? That's fine. You find the one white card that gives things haste. That probably doesn't exist. And then you tutor up all your creatures. And then you play your entire deck. And then you punch someone in the head next turn. Once you untap. I'm sold.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Sure. They can't all be great.
That's true. That's very true.
Can't all be great. It was printed in 2000. We can't have, you know, too high hopes for it. So.
I mean, rebels beget rebels, I guess.
True.
This is guerrilla warfare, not particularly well equipped, but there's a lot of us.
Yeah. Which is weird that rebels are in white. Like, I feel like rebels wouldn't be in white.
I guess it depends on...
I feel like you'd have red rebels. Maybe there were red rebels.
I feel like it depends on the type of rebel.
That's fair.
Like, are they... Like, I feel like Rebel is a very, but, like, Rebel as a term, I feel is, like, it's kind of like an Eye of the Beholder type deal.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty sure when the Praetors were, like, fucking up Marauden.
And why you gotta bring it up?
Well, it's a good example within the magic world. Like,
sure.
Like, we're killing everything, and then the Marauders, the people, are, like, fighting back, and I'm pretty sure Elsnorn was like, these goddamn rebels not just letting me kill everything, like, where, from their point of view, they're like, we're just fighting for our goddamn homeland,
yeah.
You evil. Like, so are they rebels in the fact that, like, was there an established peaceful government, and, like, they're a bunch of, like, bandits, like, ah-ha-ha, like, rebelling, like, or, like... Are they just rebels to, like, the invading, dictating force? Like,
that's fair.
I feel like they could be white rebels, like, if someone was coming in and trying to destroy their homeland. They're like, yeah. No, like maybe they've lost most of... Or maybe it's, like, a Terminator scenario where, like, they've already lost the big war,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't completely eradicated, but they refuse to still, like, just
and I feel
give
like...
up and live in the Terminator overworld. Like,
yeah.
So maybe, like, they're... They had a peaceful planet or plane, and maybe it got taken over, and they're just their remaining resistance. And the only reason they're fighting is just because they still, because, you know, it's their home world. In which case, I feel like being a rebel in that scenario is probably very white.
All right, that's fair. And I feel like in the year 2000, it was probably just Phyrexian shenanigans. So you probably were right on that.
Yeah.
All right.
Just throwing it out there.
Sure. Sure.
So, Star City Games opened Chicago.
Yeah, that is a thing we went to.
Yes, it is.
A couple times. Day one and day two.
Yeah. We went day two. We didn't make day two. We didn't play in the tournament. Yeah. There's no way to make
day two. We arrived day two.
We were also present in the hall on day two.
Yes. I stepped foot in the hall on the second day of them being at that location. But, you know, definitely, like Tyler said, we didn't play in the main event. We don't play standard. That seems silly. Why play good magic cards?
I'm tempted to play standard post-rotation of Theros and M15.
Yeah?
I want to play that sweet, sweet mono-white deck that's going to show up.
It's going to show up?
Dude.
You're sure?
Kithians, Dragon Hunters, Knight of the White Orchards, Topen, Free Plates, Consoles, Lieutenants, Vryn, Wingmates, and Archangel of Tithes, all on the same deck. I kind of want to play the deck now, because then the deck gets Soldier of the Pantheons, Breemazes, and like a one or two of Heliod with Nykthos, but there's no point in getting into that deck now with 3 months in. So I'm looking to brew a post-rotation format that's going to stay. I want to build it up mainly Dragons and Magic Origins cards, yeah. So it even lives through Khan's Fate rotation.
Yeah.
But that's less of a worry.
Yeah.
Because one of the big control deck right now is just Esper Dragons. It runs like 3 or 4 mm-hmm. Dragon Lord Ojutai, 1 Silumgar. Like, if that's your only creature, I'm just going to run 4 Dragon Hunters. And hopefully you don't run out of removal.
Yeah.
Or I just play things that are threaten you more than my Dragon Hunters, and my Dragon Hunter just blocks your dumb Dragon Lord all day. I guess until they hit Silumgar. Oh no, protection from dragons. You can't even target it with Silumgar.
What happens when they Ugin and they get rid of all of your 2 and 3 drops?
I'm sad.
Sure.
I mean, I didn't say the deck had an answer to Ugin. I said the deck had an answer to the Dragon Lords.
Sure. I mean, isn't Ugin really, like,
the I'm going to argue on, like, flavor reasons. Like, he's Ugin the spirit dragon.
Right.
He lives.
Right.
Guys, just that's not how that works. I bet.
Well, there was the land, right, that you could, like, spend that mana only on dragons or Ugin. Am I crazy?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, that was totally a thing. I'm pretty sure that was a thing. And I remember just reading it, like, that's weird. Like, the fact that it's just, like...
There's
been other dragons, like, that can't get, like, Nicol Bolas. Like, he's a dragon.
Well, I guess what I was gonna say is... Couldn't you technically subtype Planeswalker? Like, their name doesn't have to be the only subtype. But I realize then that probably gets into a whole other realm of weird...
Probably.
Like, if it was, like, Planeswalker, Supertype, Subtype, instead of Subtype just being, like, Gideon, mm-hmm. if it was, like, Human Soldier Gideon, or if it was just, like, Merfolk Wizard Kiora, Human Knight Elspeth, like,
I'd be
Cat Warrior Ajani.
I'd be down for that.
It sounds cool in theory, or, like, Dragon Ugin.
Oh, solid.
Like, I don't know what...
Spirit Dragon Ugin. Yeah. Come on now.
Ugin the Spirit Dragon, and then subtype Spirit Dragon Ugin. That would be hilarious.
I think we're on to something, guys.
Elder Dragon Nicol Bolas. Like,
solid. Yeah.
Like, what would Sarkhan's type be? Human shaman?
Shaman?
I think he's a shaman.
At this point, yeah. Before maybe a barbarian?
A human warrior barbarian?
Well, I think he's a shaman.
As Unbroken, I think he's currently a shaman. I think it'd be human shaman Sarkhan.
Fair. I like it.
Yeah.
We'll talk. Wizards, give us a call.
Human wizard Chandra.
I
mean, Pyromancer isn't a...
No.
So it'd be wizard. I think the reason I base my judgment off is I think young Pyromancer is creature type human wizard.
Wouldn't Jace also be human wizard Jace?
Human wizard Jace, yeah.
Sure. That feels wrong.
I mean, you could probably say each and every planeswalker is you know, what other races type wizard, like.
Yeah, good. Name. Yeah, good point.
Like, they're all sure. technically wizards. Sure. Like,
sure.
You're a wizard, everybody.
True.
True. But all for my pipe dreams of my dragon hunter not being affected by Ugin. But yeah, so Star City Games, day one, we didn't show up until a little later, but that's because me and Jeff presented a unified front.
Mm-hmm.
Team Junk Rares, mm-hmm. playing in a 4-round Swiss. Two-headed giant Magic Origins sealed.
And it was super fun.
Oh, so good.
It was, like, probably some of the, my, like, the best
it's
magic.
It's very interesting.
It is.
Having to build two decks out of 8 packs of cards.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stretched the limit of what I wondered was good or not.
Yeah. It's definitely the sort of thing you have to, like, you have to start valuing certain cards differently. Like, maybe Menace isn't as good since they're always, I mean, in quotations, going to have two blockers. Or any burn spell that deals damage to each opponent. Like,
becomes amazing.
Yes.
Chandra's Ignition was... What I'll say about our pool is because initially I looked at our blue and I was like, one of us... Because blue is, by a lot of people's... saying one of the weaker colors in Magic Origins Limited,
mm-hmm.
is what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But after opening our blue, I was just like, one of us has to be in blue based off our other 5 colors.
Yeah. And I don't
I didn't
blue.
Like our white too much.
No.
And I normally force white.
Sure.
But our white was not all that stellar. But our blue was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it had a lot of things. We opened a Thopter Spy Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize you needed to already have an artifact, but I threw it in there because I was just like, we had a lot of things that came in with artifacts.
Yeah.
We had the 4-drop that comes in with 2.
Mm-hmm.
We had like 2 or 3 of the 4-drop that comes in with 1 and also has flying himself.
We had the land,
we had
right?
the land that makes mm-hmm. Thopters for like if you sack it for 5.
Mm-hmm. We had the 6-drop, 4-4 flying.
The Goldforge Sentinel, which,
yep.
but like we had a lot, there was a good artifact sub theme, and a lot of things actually came in with Thopters.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, I think our blue spells were just really good. Send to Sleep, the one in the blue to tap 2 things, but Spell Mastery to keep them frosted down. Like that card ended up being a blowout in more than one scenario.
Definitely.
We just had some really good blue where I'm like, this works.
Mm-hmm. I like the counter spell. The 2 and a blue to counter the spell unless they pay 3.
And then if Scry you
have,
2.
Yeah, if you have Spell Mastery.
We played that as a 1 of.
Yeah, Scry 2 is good.
Yeah. And then, I mean, initially I looked at the red and I'm just like, oh, I was thinking about like Spell Mastery and other things. And I'm just like, this seems like it'd be solid. And I put the red and I was building a blue-red deck. But after I finished the deck, you made the point where you're like, there's still, like, 4 really good red cards that aren't in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, but I'm like, I'm to the point where, like, I don't want to cut anything. And you're like, why don't you splash a different color and I'll just take all the red? Because he's just like, red is clearly our best, so we might as well play the whole pool.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you paired it with green. And mm-hmm. we also had a Zendikar.
Incarnate. Yes.
So that ended up being good.
Yes.
And that ended up pairing nicely with... Because then I went into the black, because we did open a Languish.
We did.
And I liked it right off the bat, but I'm like, I didn't like our black. Our black creatures were very bad.
No, they were not good at all.
But it ended up working out okay, because my deck was mainly blue with like the Thopters and everything. And my black support was good.
Yeah,
I had
lots of removal.
I had 2 of the Unholy Hunger, which mm-hmm. is like the 5-drop to kill something. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you take removal where you can.
Sure.
And especially 2 at a giant. You don't have to feel as bad about it, because maybe you can hold up mana, or you play out creatures, then I just kill something.
Right.
I had the Reeve Soul, the 1 in the black, to kill someone with power 3 or less.
Oh, yeah.
We had the Languish. I had 2 Read the Bones, which I just love that card in general.
So good.
So the black support was good, like the card draw, and then with the blue, like the Spell Mastery, it all played out well.
Mm-hmm.
And then having the board wipe. And then you had Chandra's Ignition,
yeah.
which... is an absolute Blowout and Two-Headed Giant. Didn't we Shadow Condition for like 6 on a Zendikar Incarnate once?
Yes, we did. Killing all of their creatures, dealing 12 to them, and then attacking with it.
We did like 18 or 19 damage in a single turn.
It was really good.
We took our opponents from like 30 to like 8.
It was very good.
It was pretty flippin' awesome.
Like, I don't know if there is a better feeling in Magic than just be like, I'll kill your board, kill you.
And that was one game. There was another game I specifically remember. Like, we were at 14 and they were at 30.
Mm-hmm.
And we just ignitioned for 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that wiped their board. And then we swung. And I went from being 30 to 14 to 15 to 14. And it was just, and now we're in a good spot.
Well, I think that was even the same game that they had. I had played the creature where I had to, like,
Llanowar reveal. Llanowar Empath?
Yeah, I revealed
you
the cards.
To, and you got to reveal the top one. If it's a creature, you get it in your hand.
So they knew that I had it.
Yeah, we knew we wanted to draw the ignition. So we were like, we might as well just let him show it.
Yeah.
And it ended up being rude, because then he he managed to put, like, your Incarnate back on top of your library. So it took, like, 2 or 3 extra turns.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we did it, they knew it was coming still, but they bought themselves an extra, like, 2 turns. Yeah.
So they had kept back all of their creatures.
So after post-ignition, they were like, oh, well, that evened it up. But then they laid out, like, 2 or 3 creatures each, waiting for it.
Yep.
But in those 2 or 3 extra turns, I had just drawn my Languish.
Yep.
So I just played Languish, and you played Might of the Masses on your Zendikar Incarnate for +1/+1.
Yep.
But I gave it 5 toughness, and it just lived through the Languish.
Wiping their entire board again, and then I could get in for some damage.
It was like 2 or 3, because it still had the -4 power, but
yeah.
Still, it was pretty flippin' hilarious to just be like, board wipe, like.
Yeah. And it's the little combos like that. They're like, you don't really, I mean, you know, you definitely get some nice little combos if you're just playing, you know, like one-on-one.
Yeah.
But just that synergy of, like, if you and your teammate both have a synergy, it just feels so much better.
Not to mention, I feel like, I don't think, we played 4 games, went 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of a single scenario in any of those 4 games, and even the game we lost,
mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything that I would have done differently.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we left any of those games and were like, oh, like, we misplayed. Like, if we did this, we could have, like, won sooner, or we wouldn't have lost that game. And part of that has to do with when I'm looking at something, sometimes, you know, you get that one-track mind where you start thinking of one line of play, and you kind of just, like, commit too hard to it.
Yeah.
Having, like, a teammate there to be like, oh, like, I'm thinking this, and your opponent being like, oh, but hey, wait a second, dummy, like, what about that over there? Like, just in general, like, having 2 sets of eyes on a board state,
yeah.
I found that I don't think we misplayed. I think we played every game the best we could. I don't think, even the game we won, it was really close, and we did some good moves to even make it go as long as we did, but, like, what we ended up losing to, like, we had no way of interacting with it. There was nothing we could have done differently to further our, like, goal of winning the game. Like, I left all 4 games extremely happy with how we, and, I mean, it showed, we went 3-1, like, and I was like, that, it's cool having a partner there to, like, you know, collaborate with and be like, oh, like, what do you think? Like, what did you draw?
Exactly. Because, like, it's like, not everybody plays the same game, you know, like.
And I think one of the biggest things that me as I try to play more competitive Magic,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the most not talked about skills
mm-hmm.
of high level players, and that I'm slowly figuring this out the more I play, even just playing in the 8 rounds I did in the Modern 5K on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the least talked about skills that separates probably high-end players from even just, like, average to good players is mulligan decisions. Like, I feel like people gloss over it, or, like, they mention it in passing, but I don't think I've ever read, like, an article about, like, the art of mulligan, like, maybe 1 or 2, but, like, after playing, like, and honestly, I think the reason no one really writes about it is because it would be kind of a douchey article. And I think the article is just play more.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's hard. Like, you have to, basically, being a good mulliganer, I guess, literally the skills required are A, knowing your deck,
mm-hmm.
and B, knowing the meta.
Yeah.
Like, granted, you don't always know what your opponent's on game one, so your ability to... So your mulligan decisions have to be based entirely on just, okay, is this hand good for me in any scenario?
Yeah.
And there are obvious mulligans, like, six land, and, like, yeah. there are the ones where you're just like, okay, you know, a rock would know to mulligan this hand. Like, but, like, those fine-tuned ones, you're like, oh, I have... five lands and two spells, and you're like, ugh, or like, I have, or I'm playing a burn deck, and I maybe have, like, six things and one land, and I'm just like, but it's also, like, Goblin Guide, Rift Bolt, Bolt, like, is it a series of one drops where I can survive long enough with removal
yeah.
and my creature to, like, draw into another land for this, like, one, maybe Searing Blaze in my hand, like,
yeah.
It's those weird ones where you're just like, my instinct is to throw it back, but it could actually potentially just work.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a, and I, that's what I liked about Two-Headed Giant, having you there to like, now granted, the day was weird, because I think I mulliganed once in four games. My opening hands were surprisingly strong every game, and... as good as my opening hands were, yours were just that terrible,
oh, terrible.
Every single round.
I think I mulliganed like seven times in four games.
Yeah.
It was
your really mulligans bad. Were, your opening hands were terrible. But getting to the point where you're just like, okay, like you'd go to say like five and be like, okay, I have this.
Yeah.
Like, is this a good five? Like,
yeah.
It was nice to be able to like collaborate about mulligans and be like, okay, like, or, like, this is what's in my hand, what's in yours. Like,
yeah.
can you, like, can, I'm, like, looking at you and being like, okay, like, this is a potentially mulliganable hand, because it's maybe, like, two, three land, but then all my, like, high-end curve stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, Jeff, can I keep this? Like,
do you have enough creatures?
Do you have enough early game that I can keep my late game, or vice versa? Like,
mm-hmm.
it was nice, like, being able to, that, like, just, like, playing off each other. Like, it was a lot of fun. Like, it was a whole different aspect of Magic.
Definitely.
And, like, having someone else there to, like, talk about all those, you know, minute details with was a lot of fun.
Definitely. Definitely. But that was not the only Magic play that weekend. You participated, the second day, you participated in the Modern 5K?
Yes, I did.
So how did that go? I don't know.
yeah. Well... obviously, we can do a quick match rundown,
mm-hmm.
but the story doesn't end well.
Nope. Not quite.
But I have to be careful about what I say, obviously. Mm-hmm. I will give you, the listeners, just kind of the straight facts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to kind of go in unbiased mode and just sure. recount what I remember that's absolutely factual.
Uh-huh.
But we'll get there. Round one was the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel terrible about that one. I ended up losing in two.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really just a scenario where in game one, he went first. And he killed me the same turn I was going to kill him. Except, you know, he was one turn ahead.
Sure.
Like, if he would have passed, he would have been dead to me.
Yeah.
But that's also very often a thing in the mirror.
Yeah.
Game two, I don't think either one of us saw our sideboard cards. But I did have to mulligan to five, which Ooh. More or less sealed my fate.
Yeah.
Because I got to a point where I got him down to three.
Mm-hmm.
I was at 10, suspended a Rift Bolt because it was my only play, and passed the turn, and then he just managed to put together 11 damage.
Oh.
But he had a Monastery Swift Spear on the board, so it's not all that improbable. I
gotcha.
Think he just, like, a Tarkus Command, choosing three to me, and plus one, so that, right off the bat, made this sphere six. And I think he just bolted me.
Yeah.
Because that put me from... because the
original... that'd be 6 to 9, and then...
the Tarkus Command put me from 11 to 10, 9, 8. The Bolt put me to 5. And at this point, the Swift Spear was a 4.
And then did you have a...
or maybe, I'll take it back. I feel it might have been a Boros Charm, even.
Oh, okay.
Because 4, 4, 8, 9... yeah, it was Boros Charm. Because mm-hmm. it was exactly 11. So mm-hmm. it was just Command, Charm, Swift Spear for 4. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'll get you there. But, yeah, I mean, having two cards in hand, like, he had, like, three or four cards in hand, so, and then just playing two of them. So, Spirit gets dumb. Yeah, so I wasn't too upset about it. Just I'm just like, yeah, that'll happen.
Yep. So round two.
Round two, I don't know why I even bothered playing the whole round. Because I went, my opponent went first and went Windbrisk Heights. And I was just, like white, black tokens maybe? Like, because that attacks with like three things, like yeah. between the Lingering Souls and the Raise the Alarms. Like,
yeah.
And you're hoping to Windbrisk Heights into something like a Zealous, I don't know what. But, what? Okay, so I was like okay, a turn one tap land, land guide, like, seems like I'm going to do okay. And then turn two, they just went Plains, tap the Windbrisk Kite, Soul's Attendant, tap the Windbrisk Kite, Soul Warden. And I was just, and I'm dead. Not dead, but I lose
right.
because you're playing Soul Sisters. And I proceeded to lose
right.
both games.
Like you do.
Yes. And that was rough.
I can imagine.
Turns out what he put underneath that Windbrisk Kites game one ended up being an Archangel of Thune, which was upsetting.
Oh.
Yeah. That was just, I should have just scooped the second he went Soul's Attendant, Soul's Warden, and been like, see you around, I'm going to round three yeah. later, dude.
Yeah, good luck on the rest of your matches.
But yeah, that was just brutal. I mean, yeah, just nothing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's nothing more to
even with Tarkus Command and, like, Skullcrack, like, no. I can only stop so much of this ridiculousness.
Yeah. Yeah. So round three.
Round three, I played a Bloom Titan deck.
Okay.
Which was actually a blast. That, I think, was my most fun match of the day.
Yeah.
Round one, game one of that, it was cool because games one and two, both of our decks went like eight cylinders mode. Mm-hmm. Like I went like game one, like land, like guide into like turn two, like land, suspend a Rift Bolt, like Swift Spear into like just like creatures on the ground. I killed him on like turn four. Okay. Like it was just kind of dumb. He didn't do things fast enough or get creatures out, and I was just, yeah, you're dead. Like
sure.
It was kind of rude. And then game two on the play, he went dumb. Where like on turn two, he played out like two Amulet of Vigors.
Ooh.
And then it was like turn three, like I think turn three, he went land, because he had two lands on the board, and he just played out a Simic Growth Chamber.
Sure.
Tapped the other two. Bound. He targeted his own. So he put the Simic Growth Chamber just back in his hand.
Yeah.
But he got four mana off of it, and then six, and just like turn three, prime timed me finding the Boros Garrison, and like, and I was just like, I was like, yeah, man, like
sure,
whatever you say. Like turn three, prime time seems good. Like
yeah,
it was kind of ridiculous. Like I couldn't do anything. And game three got super weird.
Uh-huh.
Because he started out with Leyline. He's like, let me know when you're good. And it was like, Leyline. And I was just like, I'm like, it's a really good thing my opening hand had a Goblin God and a Swift Spear in it. And so a majority of this game was me swinging for pretty much just three. And him having terrible draws, where he was doing nothing.
Yeah.
And at one point, he even hit an Obstinate Balaw, or a Thrag Tusk, mm-hmm. putting him up like, what was it, like three, like five life, I think?
Yeah.
However much Thrag Tusk is, and I was just like, ugh. But I then got to play out two, this was near the end of the game, I got to play out two Rift, because I'm like, oh, well, at least I'll put both my Rift Bolts out.
Mm-hmm.
And, I did manage to blow up his ley line at one point because I had brought in Destructive Revelries and I had brought him in for the Amulet of Vigors just because that card is so good in the deck.
Yeah.
But I ended up blowing up his ley line and the very next turn he hard cast another ley line.
Ugh.
And I was just, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where all I had left was my Goblin Guide. I had gotten rid of his Thrag Tusk and the token.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at 5 life. My hand consisted of a deflecting palm.
Sure.
And that was it. And on the previous turn, he had cast out a hive mind.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, I don't know where I'm getting 5 damage from. And he has a hive mind. I might just be in for like a pact of whatever loss.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was on. I think I wouldn't have lost to a summoner's pact. Because I think I had both my stomping grounds at the time.
Sure.
Because the target's command gets around ley line. Because it just says deal 3 to each opponent. It doesn't actually target.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's not terrible. Like.
Yeah.
So I had went and got both my stomping grounds in case I drew my Tarka's commands. But I was just like, this is ridiculous. And I passed to him. He draws his card. And out loud, he says, this might work. And I was like, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
Right.
And he did some Bloom Titan stuff, and it ended with Primetime,
mm-hmm.
go get Slayer Sanctuary, or Slayer Stronghold, and Boros Garrison,
mm-hmm.
give him +2/+0 Vigilance Haste, Swing, and I was like, in response, Deflecting Palm it, and I'm like, I guess you get a Deflecting Palm too,
yeah.
which would have just been 8 damage to me, because I don't know the rules layering, but I'm pretty sure with his Deflecting Palm, he can just pick my Deflecting Palm, because my Deflecting Palm was picking his Prime Time.
Yeah.
So, I still don't know for sure. I'm almost 90% positive that's the way it works.
Yeah.
But he chose to not do that. I think he just chose, like, my Goblin Guide with his, because he thought it didn't work any other. I don't know what his thing was, but I mean, he probably misplayed that because yeah. I think
maybe he thought that it was like a permanent or something that something like yeah. a permanent would deal damage.
I don't know for sure, but he just chose my Goblin Guide, let his palm resolve, and then said, "I'll Pact of Negation your Deflecting Palm."
Yeah,
and that was where I was just like, that's the part where I'm like, okay, you definitely misplayed because I'm just like using my copy with from the Hive Mind. I'll Pact of Negation your Pact of Negation. And he was just, damn it. And then my Deflecting Palm resolved, dealing 8 to his head.
Yep.
And I won the game.
That seems like the best way to ever win a game of
Oh, Fantasy. Deflecting Palming a Prime Time was just the best. Yeah. I was, red, white for 8 damage seems good. I like when my Boros Charm is x2 for no reason.
That's good. That's good.
That's because good. That sweet doesn't target, Broke Palm doesn't target, yeah. so that ley line didn't mean dick.
Yeah. All right, so that was round
that was three. Round, that was round 3. That was probably my favorite game of the day.
Okay, so round 4.
So I'm 1-2, go to round 4, and I'm playing Esper Control.
Okay.
But I really liked it, because it was this dude's like weird homebrew Esper Control playing Monastery Mentors. And I just really like that card.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the most upsetting game, because in game 1, I got him to 1 life, and I was at, like, 11 or 12,
mm-hmm.
and he had, like, some spirit tokens from Lingering of the Souls, and, like, he had the mentor out there, and he was swinging for, like, 3 a turn or about that. Basically, I got him to 1 life, no cards in hand, no things on the board, and just top deck mode. And I got 2 more turns before he was able to put together killing me.
Yeah.
And in both those turns, I just ripped land.
Oh. Womp womp.
And I was just, this is upsetting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that happened. And then I didn't win that game. And then game 2, he started with a ley line on the board. And I was just, why do I keep getting ley lines? Like, not even like hard cast ley lines, but like opening hand. Because he didn't mulligan. I'm like, it was in your opening 7? Damn it.
Yeah.
And I never found my revelry. Because I actually brought revelries in, assuming an Esper deck. I'm like, this is probably running ley lines.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like the core Firewalker fits its, like, theme of, like...
Mm-hmm.
It wants to be playing its, like, mentors and, like, stuff. Like, I feel like Mentor was one of the only creatures in the deck. Because it was very, like, Lingering Souls. Like, it did a lot of things where I think it just wanted to get more value. Like, it got creatures on the board through, like... raise the alarm or, like, lingering souls, and then, like, they wanted to, like, control you out. And I feel it was, it might have been running just the mentors, hoping that then whenever it made other creatures with other cards, it would just get more monk tokens. Mm-hmm. And even if I was wrong, how do I deal with Core Firewalker other than I have one Skullcrack in my deck. So other than that, it was just like, might as well bring in the Revelries.
Yeah.
But I never drew it.
Okay.
So that Leyline sat there and just basically, you know, wrote my will out for me. And I just lost that game due to not being able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have 1-3. And then, so that was round 4.
Mm-hmm.
Round 5, I played Blue-Red Twin.
Okay.
Splinter Twin.
Mm-hmm.
But he never drew any of his combo pieces at all game 1 or 2.
That doesn't seem good at all.
And game 1, I just killed him because his draws were terrible. And then it was funny because game 1, the only cards I saw him play were Remand, Bolt, Snapcaster, and Serum Visions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going into sideboarding and I'm like, I don't know if he's playing Delver or Twin. Because it could be either one of those things based on the cards. He's just playing the most played. All he played against me were all just the most played blue and red cards.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what to board in here. So I said, I should have brought in my Torpor Orbs because no matter what, it would have shut down Snapcaster against Delver.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was on Twin, it would have shut it down. But I messed that up and I didn't bring those in because I'm like, I didn't know if it was Twin or not.
Yeah.
And then game 2, I think I just got double Goblin Guides, like, to start, and I was just going crazy. And the only reason I knew he ended up being on Twin is because on the attack that ended up, on the attack for Lethal, he attacked, I attacked, trigger, revealed that top card of his library from Goblin Guide, it was Deceiver Exarch. And I'm like, oh, so you're on Twin! And he was just like, this is the first piece of Twin I even have seen, and like, he told me he didn't draw. He never, not only did I not see those cards, he never even saw them in his hand. He's like, that's the first piece of the combo I saw in this game or game 1, and not even going to get to my hand because you're about to kill me. Because I think the attack put him to like 2, and he's like, you're going to kill me, right? And I'm like, I do have this Bolt, and he's like, yeah, I'm dead. So he never actually got in his hand any not the Splinter, not the Aura, and he never hit Pestermite or Deceiver Exarch, and I was just like, that's bad beats, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So now I'm 2-3. Next round, so round 6, I played Blue-Red Delver, and game 1, I felt bad. The guy drew all 4 of his Delvers.
Oh.
And the reason I knew he was drawing his Delvers is because he went turn 1 Delver, and I went turn 1... No, I take that back. He went turn 1 Serum Visions.
Mm-hmm.
I went turn 1 Goblin Guide. And the card he flipped over that was going to be his first draw of the game was a Delver. And I was like, that's funny. And so then... Game... So, yeah. Turn 2, he played out his Delver. And then my turn, I, you know, swing again, doesn't want to block just yet. Flip over, it's actually a land card.
Okay.
Puts it in his hand. His turn 3, he plays out another Delver. And I'm like, that had to have been his draw. Because if it wasn't already, because I knew his first draw was Delver. His second draw would have been a land because I gave it to him with the Goblin Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had already had a Delver in your hand, your first turn would not have been Island Serum Visions. That would be terrible as a Delver player considering the optimal turn 1 Delver play is turn 1 Delver.
Yeah. Having a deck, you know.
Named Blue-Red Delver.
Sure. You probably want to play Delvers. Sure.
And then my next 2 Goblin Guide attacks, he flipped over 2 more Delvers.
Ah.
So his top 5 cards was Delver, land, Delver, Delver, Delver. And I was just like, what?
That guy needs to shuffle better.
I was just... And he just died because he wasn't doing anything.
Right.
Because his Delvers weren't flipping.
Sure.
And then game 2, just so rude. I just went land. He went land Delver, and I think I just went like land, suspend a Rift Bolt, he flipped his Delver on my turn. I let the Rift Bolt just kill the Delver. Mm-hmm. Then I went, like, land, Eidolon of the Great Revel. And turn three, I just put out another Eidolon.
Oh.
And so now if anybody casts a spell, CMC three or less, they just took four. And I'm like, I'm not going to cast spells. I'll just save it. And then I would just swing for four every turn.
Yeah.
And eventually he's like, I can't be taking four anymore. And he had to flash in a Snapcaster Mage as a chump blocker because he couldn't actually flash anything back.
Yeah.
Because if he, even if he did, he would have taken eight to do that. So yeah, he just flashed in the Snapcaster, took four, chump blocked one. And I'm like, those like three turns that you just took 12 damage because you didn't want to play anything. I also drew three cards. So I have this Grip of Burn. And I'm like, oh, now one of my Eidolons is finally dead. Bulp, bulp, bulp. Like, just dead.
Yeah.
Just dead, dead, dead.
Okay.
It was awesome.
So that was round six.
Yes. So now I pulled the 3-3.
Mm-hmm.
Two straight wins. I was feeling okay. Because going into this, what I set for myself was that I'm like, I'm going to drop if I hit four losses.
Mm-hmm.
So as early as round four when I was 1-3, I was like, these are all my back against the wall games.
Oh, yeah.
Round seven, I got to my seat. And my opponent was just like, Tyler? And I was like, yeah. And he's just, I'm going to scoop to you. And I was like, what? And he's like, yep, I'm going to give you the old 2-0, you win. And I was like, oh, why? And he's just, me and my friends are hungry. I don't want to be here anymore.
I did hear there was a pretty good steak truck outside.
And I was just, okay. Sat there for 5 minutes, gave us our slip, he signed it, I win!
That's good. That's good.
So then we played just Commander while I waited. And then round eight is where things got real weird.
Yeah.
I was playing Azorius Control. I won game one. Game two, he went on Curve Core Firewalker. Mm-hmm. Couldn't beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Game three, things were tight for a little while. He started to pull away. And he had a Core Firewalker on the he managed to get another one on the board. And he was at like 12 life. And I was at like 6. But he had a Restoration Angel on the board. And I was like, well, considering all my burn does one less, I don't think I'm getting there with him at 12 damage.
Yeah.
And I was like, might as well just play out my hand, see what happens. Oh, yeah. Like,
he might misplay or something.
Yeah, you know? Like whatever.
You never know.
Just play it all out.
Mm-hmm.
So my hand was a Tarkus Command, Lava Spike, Bolt, and Boros Charm. And I'm like, well, I mean, I play out the Bolt first, right? And I had a Swift Spear on the board, but wasn't doing much because of that Core Firewalker. I'm like, I might as well play the Bolt out first. That way, if he does something to it, hopefully, like, you know, eats a Dispel or a Negate, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The Boros Charm is worth more damage. So I play my Lightning Bolt. And, you know, I tap my mana, tap my one mana, hold my Bolt out, say, Bolt you for three, or Bolt you for essentially two.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, first trigger, gain a life. I'm like, yeah. From the Firewalker. And he's like, and then he taps four mana. And I'm like, okay, so I'm getting something. I didn't know. Is he floating a bunch of mana, like Snapcaster, Dispel? Like, who knows? Uh-huh. Ends up being Cryptic Command. And he chooses two options. He's holding his Cryptic and goes, like, counter the Bolt. He pauses for a second. And let's say, I think he was deciding if he wanted to draw a card or not.
Sure.
But he just went with Bounce Your Swift Spear. Because this was actually his second Core Firewalker.
Uh-huh.
I killed the first one through swinging with a Swift Spear. He blocks it, and I actually got a Skullcrack.
Okay.
But I only have a one Skullcrack in my deck. I guess he probably didn't want to get caught by that again.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, it took me a moment to process. And he was just, because, you know, the counter. And then, you know, took that, like, 1 or 2 seconds deciding. And he's like, oh, let's just bounce the Swift Spear. And I was just, yeah, okay. And because that entire time, like, I had been holding my Bolt out,
mm-hmm.
like, I was holding it in front of me, like, still in my hand, because he said he wanted to do something. I'm like, okay. And I did make a mistake. Like, this is what happened. He bounced it and just, you gotta remember, this is round eight. We had eaten breakfast at, like, 8 a.m. on our way there,
uh-huh.
and I ate, like, a Snickers bar after, like, round six.
Uh-huh.
But with the same hand that I was holding that Bolt out in,
mm-hmm.
I, like...
Scooped up.
I scooped up the Swift Spear with it. Like, I put it underneath the Swift Spear and then, like, you know, like, put the Swift Spear, like, into my... Like, between my thumb and forefinger. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, because this is bounced. And so now that bolt was under the Swift Spear and I inadvertently put it in my hand. Just that pile of two cards. And for those of you out there listening, yes, that bolt does not go in my hand.
Correct.
And I was just like, I didn't realize it. My opponent didn't realize it. It was just one of those things where I knew I was probably going to lose this game.
Uh-huh.
I was late in the day. I got careless. And I technically cheated. Yeah. Within the bounds of the rules, I cheated.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay. And then I tapped my two mana because I was still thinking about casting that Boros Charm. Did that. Cast my Boros Charm. Put him to, like, 10, I think, total. Because he gained 2 and I did 7 damage. So 12, 14 mana. No, he got to, like, 9 or 8. Something like that. Whatever it was. I had an Atarka's Command that I actually couldn't cast in my hand. And, like, a Lava Spike or whatever it was. Because I didn't have a Stomping Ground.
Mm-hmm.
Passed the turn to him, swing with his Restoration Angel, put me to 3, leaves a man on tap, passed his turn, and I thought to myself, yeah, play out my Swift Spear. Oh, you know what? It was a Shard Volley. It was the last card in my hand, because for the lulls, that turn I was going to be Swift Spear, sack my mountain, Shard Volley my own Swift Spear,
sure.
Which it would die,
sure.
And then just scoop, because I'm like, I didn't have the game. He had it. Like,
yeah.
But I was just going to be funny and vaguely wish I would have just scooped on his turn, because what ended up happening was before I could do any of those actions, I untap my land, I'm reaching to draw my card, and a judge walks over and says, would you guys hold on for a minute? And I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this judge pauses our game. He tells us, he says, who just went last? And my opponent's like, he said, what'd you do? He's like, I just swung for 3. And he's like, okay. He's like, what did you do the turn before that? And I just casted some burn at him. Yeah. And he's like, what did you cast? And I was just like, a lightning bolt and a Boros Charm.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge says, can you tell me where that lightning bolt is?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, and I'm like, my graveyard. And I look at my graveyard, and it wasn't there. And I didn't say my graveyard. He's like, where's that bolt? And I look at my graveyard, and I see my Boros Charm. And sitting right underneath the Boros Charm is not a bolt. And I was just, it hit me immediately. I was just like, uh-oh. Because, like, where else could it be, right?
Right.
And so I look at the graveyard, look at my hand, and I'm like, oh. And I show him the bolt in my hand.
Yeah.
And he asked why I put it in my hand, and I mean, I was kind of on the spot. I didn't know, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I guess I just treated the Cryptic like a remand for whatever reason. And he was just like, "Why did you do that?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And as the more I thought about it, I'm fairly certain what happened was the Cryptic interaction was the scooping it is what was. But I mean, on the spot, I didn't know what to say. I'm like, because I didn't know. Like, I had no idea why I did it.
Yeah.
And I think it was a combination of just being tired, like, all these things that led to a bad mistake on my part that is cheating, especially under competitive REL. And basically, it goes up the line of judges. He goes and gets another judge. That judge asks me some questions, and they decide to go to the head judge. And the final decision made was to disqualify me from the tournament for cheating, because the given reason was that basically there was no hard proof either way about whether I was lying or telling the truth about it being an honest mistake. And he said, because there's no hard proof and all we're going off of is eyewitness accounts, he's like, I have no choice other than to maintain the integrity of the tournament by disqualifying you.
Yeah. Which,
and
I mean,
that is verbatim what happened.
Yeah.
I'd rather not comment any further about how I feel or what I think should have happened, because that's not my place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a judge.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the facts. I technically cheated.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mistake on my part. I mean, listeners can obviously choose to believe me or not. I mean, sure. But it was an honest mistake, and I am sorry. I mean, obviously, I feel bad. I don't want to be a cheater. Like, that's what I'm trying to break into playing competitive Magic to a somewhat high level. And, you know, like, now this counts against me, and that sucks. And, you know, I don't feel good about it, but I do understand that I did cheat. Like, even though it was not intentional, it was cheating.
Yeah.
And I get that with no real evidence, he took what he felt to be the proper course of action, and so the head judge disqualified me, and I don't hold that against him.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I will find out. Every disqualification case is reviewed by the DCI Investigations Committee, and it is then determined whether or not I will be banned for any amount of time or if at all. Mm-hmm. And that's just where I'm at. And it was a heartbreaking way to end the day. And, I mean, obviously I'm upset, but I understand the decision, and we can comment more once, maybe go a little more into the emotional aspect of it, an opinion-based aspect, once the DCI ruling comes through.
Yeah.
But until that time, those are just the facts of what happened.
Sure, sure. Yeah, definitely, definitely not a good day. Or not a good way to end that day.
No, not at all.
But, I mean, you know, I guess it happens. Mistakes were made.
Yeah. Unfortunate mistakes.
Yeah. But I played a lot of Commander that day.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. I got disqualified from no games. So my day was strictly better. So.
Pretty much. Like, I don't think...
I got to see a foil Chandra get passed in a draft, and that was nuts.
That's gross.
Right. That's a $40 card. I don't know why you passed that. But, yeah, I don't have any sort of good stories. Nothing that can top that. So, I say...
Oh, thanks.
I say we...
I got the strictly better story.
I say we just hop right into Commander's Corner?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I am down for that. So, this week on Commander's Corner, we had another request, and we're going to be talking about Anamar, Soul of Elements. Not of the elements, just elements. Which...
Sure.
Okay, sure. I don't know. They probably just ran out of room to type the name. So that's fair.
I mean, maybe. Looking at how much of it fills the text box before the...
I don't know. I feel like Kamigawa, you fit quite a few names in Kamigawa. I feel like they could have fit the in there. But Anamar, to run through it, blue-red-green, he's a 1/1 legendary creature elemental. And he has three abilities, so you guys can follow along at home. Protection from white and black. So, it's good abilities. I feel like...
Let's be honest, that's gross.
I feel like a 3-drop, 1/1, pro white and black, this card would see play if your meta has a lot of white and black commanders.
How about we read the other two abilities and then talk about how he doesn't even need the pro white and black?
Sure. I just want to first and foremost say, with that one ability alone, you would probably build some sort of Anamar Voltron, and that would be a good deck. But yes, like Tyler says, he has two more abilities. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you put a +1/+1 counter on Anamar, Soul of Elements. So you're probably going to play a lot of creatures. So, again, just... play some creatures out, he'll get bigger. Sweet. Pro white, pro black. They can't kill him, they can't block him if they're those colors. Great. That third ability that just slams that coffin shut and just puts the final nail in it. Creature spells you cast cost one less for each +1/+1 counter on Anamar. That ability makes this card... nuts. I just want to go ahead and say, If you like playing creatures...
If you can reduce every creature to just their colored mana casting costs, yes. That seems solid.
Yes. Absolutely. And then just for every single one of those creatures, you're making him bigger, thus making your bigger creatures cheaper, so you can play them for just their casting. Oh, my good lord. This card is disgusting.
He gets dumb. He gets very, very dumb very fast,
too. And because of that, I just want to take just a quick second to say me and Tyler did decide, talking to some of you guys, about the route that we would go with Commander's Corner. And we realized if we only talk about commanders that are under the $5 budget, we're going to run out of options really quick. So because of that, Animart is over $5. I think he's actually closer to like $15 at this point, because Tiny Leaders kind of became a thing. So we did decide that going on, the legendary creature that is your commander very well might be more than $5, but because of our limited options, we kind of have to. But, I mean, this is junk rares. The other 99 will still be very cheap cards. And we definitely have some doozies.
That's for sure.
I don't know if I've ever said the word doozy before. But if there was ever to be one...
If there was ever a doozy to be had?
Yes. Animar Soul of Doozies. I mean, that's just a good altar for you. Yeah.
Unsettling. I don't like it. I gotta work past that now.
It's fair. Alright. You know, if you want me to try to get past that for you, this deck, there's gonna be some combos that you're gonna probably want to play. First, Out of the Gate, Ancestral Statue. So this is a 4-drop artifact.
Infinitely big Animar dot card.
Yeah. Ancestral Statue is a 4-drop, 3/4, but that's irrelevant. When he enters the battlefield, you return a non-land permanent you control to its owner's hand. So this guy is colorless. So he doesn't have any colored mana. Cast him for 4, Animar gets a counter, you bounce himself. Cast him for 3, Animar gets a counter, he bounces himself. And then 2, and then 1, and then 0000000.
That's all assuming he doesn't already have counters on him.
Right. I mean, if you cast Ancestral Statue when there's 2 counters on Animar, you know, you've played, like, a couple mana dorks or something. And then you can just
make your Animar infinitely big.
Yes.
And then just cast whatever you want.
Absolutely.
For its colored mana.
Absolutely.
Maybe if you even just have some of the common Eldrazi, those become free.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Artisan of Kozilek. Yeah.
Artisan of Kozilek, Pathraiser of Ulamog, Ulamog's Crusher. I mean, those are all the common and uncommons. They're like a buck each.
And then your just Animar is also ridiculously large.
Right. I mean, if you have any way to give trample or super trample, anything. Just, they won't be able to block a 1 million, 1 million. I promise you. And it's good to note, even if they have protection from, like, green or something, like, any trample damage will still go over protection. Or any sort of, like, fog bank effect. So you definitely want some ways to get him over. Or if they're just playing a white or black deck, they just can't block or deal with him. And then you just crush him, like, turn 5. It's disgusting.
It's very disgusting.
I do want to say, I want to throw out real quick, since we were talking about the Eldrazi, one Eldrazi you should definitely put in this deck. We haven't mentioned it yet, mostly because I completely forgot this was a thing. But when you go to pick up all of your Pathraisers of Ulamog and Ulamog's Crusher, get like 50 of them if you want. Because you can also play Spawnsire of Ulamog. That's a 10-drop 7/11 with Annihilator 1. And he has 2 abilities. You can pay 4 to get 2 little Eldrazi spawn that you can sack for mana. Or you can just pay 20 to cast any number of Eldrazi you own outside of the game. So yeah. Just get like 50 Ulamog's Crushers and then drop them all into play. Because that's got to feel good, right? And then they like Insurrection.
I don't know how I feel about that.
And the insurrection take all of them, kill you, right?
I feel you have to play things that give your creatures haste.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
In this scenario of yours.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, Animar is fun because on top of all that, like, say you don't even want to go the combo route, you can go pretty hardcore value mode with mm-hmm. this deck. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the Ancestral Statue was like a nickel.
Sure.
But honestly, like, if you can get to three counters on Animar,
mm-hmm.
any suite of morph creatures you have, yep. which if you've got, if you're a drafter, if you're just standard player, like, probably been opening a lot of Fate and Cons, and being able to cast those guys, you know, for free in their morph mode.
Yep.
And then just basically casting them for whatever their morph and or megamorph cost is, like, mm-hmm. things like the Stratus Dancer, who flips up for a negate,
mm-hmm.
Antioch Survivalist, he flips up for a naturalize, like,
you have a Willbender to redirect their spell or ability.
Yeah, like, just a lot of things where, like, if you think someone has a cool, like, you can actually make a morph sub-theme work, because now you don't have to cast for the morph cost, and then it's flip-up cost. Just cast it for free, face mm-hmm. down, and then flip it up whenever you want. Like,
mm-hmm.
that seems just like a solid way to just get creatures out for free. Like,
yeah.
So that's awesome. I mean, you could just do fun things like that, or then just, I mean, just a lot of value plays, I guess, in yeah. Animar can even produce. There's a lot of good, solid ways to draw cards.
Definitely.
In Animar. Mm-hmm. Two good ones that, you know, depending on the amount of counters on them, they could cast for as cheap as green-green.
Mm-hmm.
A 6-drop Soul of the Harvest. He's a 6-drop 6/6 with trample. But whenever a non-token creature ETB is under your control, you just get to draw a card.
Yep.
Seems solid.
Mm-hmm.
Primordial Sage. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you draw a card.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to resolve.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have both of them on the field and you, you know, cast your guy, you get to draw a card for casting him, and then you draw another card when he ETBs.
Mm-hmm.
I like getting two cards just for playing one of my creatures that I probably want to be doing in Animar.
Definitely. So kind of blurring the line between combo and value, I want to throw out Cloudstone Curio. It's a 3-drop artifact, and that says whenever a non-artifact enters the battlefield under your control, you can return something with the same permanent type to your hand. So, say you have something like that out. You know, you have your like your Soul of the Harvest or whatever it be. You play a creature for 1 or 2 mana at this point. You draw a card. Then you can return another creature to your hand. Play out that creature for 1 or 2. Draw a card. Return the first creature to your hand. It's a lot of things like that. I mean, these, maybe not so much, you know, combos, but these nice little synergies that it's only costing you, you know, 1 mana to do some sort of usually pretty big effect, you know. If you have, like, a Mold Drifter or something when you're doing that, play the Mold Drifter to draw 2, return the other thing, play the other thing, get the Mold Drifter back, like, play it for 1.
And all of these are just going to keep putting counters on NMR, too. Like, yes. Doing all this just makes him bigger.
Yes.
Other good ways of also, like, drawing cards in this deck. I mean, other than the fact that you're just in blue. Yeah. But based on, like, if you just want to play more creatures, new from Magic Origins, it's a 3-drop enchantment, Elemental Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever a creature with power 3 or greater comes into the field, you draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
A cool creature-based one, Shaman of the Great Hunt. He's a 4-drop, 3 and a red for 4/2 haste. But whenever a creature you control deals damage to a player, it just gets a counter.
Okay.
But it has a ferocious ability for 2 colorless and then hybrid green-white, hybrid or hybrid blue-green, hybrid blue-green.
Mm-hmm.
So it costs 4. So draw a card for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. And obviously ferocious things you can't activate unless you have a creature with power 4 or greater. But so if you got some just,
I mean, he himself is...
Yeah, so he turns it on.
Yeah.
So just, I mean,
you'll be getting one from him, one from Animar. I mean,
yeah, just probably anything. Just if you got some semi-beefy things out there, 4 mana.
Your maybe, 50 Ulamog Scrushers.
Yeah, or even if just, like, you know, four mana, and if it's three, then it's just, I mean, then it's a harmonize. Like, a free harmonize seems solid every turn.
Yeah.
Shamanic Revelation, also from Fate Reforged.
Mm-hmm.
Draw a card, three green-green. Just draw a card for each creature you control. And Ferocious, you gain four life for each creature you control with power four or greater.
Okay.
Like, potentially spend five mana, draw five or six cards, maybe draw, like, gain, like, 20 life. Like,
sure.
Seems decent.
Yeah.
And then not another, I guess, teamer clan but thing, but from DTK.
Okay.
A card that I think will be randomly just make you win the game in a lot of scenarios.
Right.
Two and a green. You can tap it to add two mana and any combination of colors to your mana pool. And you can only spend that mana to cast creature spells. But, I mean, that's okay. Like, yeah, a three-drop that taps for two, and then...
Yeah.
Just another way to, like, where all you have to deal with is casting costs, like, maybe card casting costs. That's a good way of possibly doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you... You don't necessarily need a lot of ramp in an Anamar deck, because of the fact that Anamar makes all your things cheaper.
Yeah.
But if you decide to anyways... the Shaman of Forgotten Ways has an excellent formidable ability, but it costs 11 mana. 9 green-green, and tap it. As long as the total power... You have more than 8 total power on the board, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with Anamar, that feels... I feel like you should get to that very easily.
Yes.
Each player's life total becomes the number of creatures he or she controls.
Okay.
I mean, that seems solid. I mean...
Yeah.
Granted, you might not necessarily, obviously you can, because you can choose one to do that. I mean, if somebody's playing like tokens or something at the board, it seems like a bad decision.
Yeah, you just don't do that.
But if you're against like some control player who's maybe got one or two things on the board,
mm-hmm.
like, and if your life total can become like 10, so you have like 10 creatures, and other people have maybe like 1, 2, 3, then their life total becomes that. And at that point, if you just swing at them with everything, even if they can block some of the stuff, they can't, as long as one thing with, say, like, 3 or 4 power gets through.
Yeah.
Like, and you should be representing 8 power on board just because of activating it, so.
Yeah.
That seems, like, really solid.
I definitely think, so, there's, what's the elf? 2 and a green, he's the 1/1 that when he enters you can get a forest.
What elves?
Okay, so if you play, like, any sort of effect like that.
Creatures that...
Yeah, any sort of creature things, that...
Sakura Tribe Elder. Mm-hmm. And you can just play a... And in all honesty, I feel like playing even just a lot of mana dorks in this deck feels good. Like,
yeah.
Rattleclaw Mystic, like, low drop things that can tap for colored mana, because then those will take care of the colored casting costs in creatures you mm-hmm. control. And then they're also adding counters.
Yeah.
So, like, things like Bloom Tender, Rattleclaw Mystic... all the one drop elves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't be opposed to just jamming a lot of those in my deck.
Yeah.
Birds, like.
Because, I mean, all of those will get you the, like, the birds especially will get you that, a turn two Anamar. But yeah, I definitely think with. Granted, this is a lot of mana at this point, but you know what? We live in Christmas land, so I don't even care. With that trigger on the stack, that just each player's life total becomes the number of creatures. In response to that, cast Psych Rift, overloaded. I don't care if they have creatures, just return them all, and then win. And then hope that you don't get Psych Rifted in return. But if you do...
Everybody loses.
Yeah!
Simultaneously, everybody loses.
And that's a great story to have. So you know what?
Which I don't just, even I think care. Everyone just, I think it's just called the draw.
Sure. Yeah. But you know in your heart that you won.
But, so, we were talking about a card draw.
Okay. I like
Cartier. Another good combo engine. If you decide to go hard, fast into the, I just got a bunch of creatures in my deck.
Which you should.
Sages of the Anima.
Okay.
These are actually Animar sages.
Sure.
And so you could imagine they do things with Animar.
You know what I would do if I had sages?
I don't want to know.
Oh.
If you would draw a card, there are 5-drop, 3 blue-green for a 3/4. If you would draw a card, instead reveal the top 3 cards of your library. Put all creature cards revealed this way into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
That's good.
So, yeah. I mean, granted, It's not a May ability.
Sure.
But if you're just going to go out and do some crazy stuff, or you flood the board, and like say you play that Shamanic Revelation, and say you're, oh, I got 5 cards to draw.
Yeah.
Instead, you're going to look at 15 cards in chunks of 3.
Yep.
And all of those creature cards are going to go in your hand.
Yeah. And you're going to be playing
And then
those...
hopefully you can just play them out because Animar makes things cheap.
Exactly. Having to reveal them isn't a big deal because you're going to be revealing them when they're punching your opponent. It's not a big deal that you're showing them what you have in your hand because you should definitely be playing a ton of creatures in this deck. I probably, like... Now, that's a good card. And, you know, I'm going to let you finish, but to one-up that... I would totally play Primal Surge in this deck. 8 green sorcery. You exile the top card of your library. If it's a permanent, you put it into play. Which, that doesn't seem very good. But then, if it is a permanent, you repeat that process. And you just keep repeating it until you whiff. So, I would play a non-zero number of instants and sorceries. Because you don't want to go through your entire library.
Why not?
Because you'll probably have a permanent that comes in that makes you draw a card. And then you'll lose. So I wouldn't do that. But...
Seems sketchy.
Or...
Maybe don't do that. Maybe just have it all be activated abilities.
I mean, sure. Sure.
Although I guess if you hit the when they ETB guy...
Right.
Then you do lose...
Sure. You lose some good value if you're not running any of those guys. But just play the Lab Maniac. So that as you're going through your deck, eventually you'll hit him.
And then you just win?
Yeah, there are other things
if,
will come
if you
in.
Go all permanents, Lab Maniac... Well, then the only non-permanent is the Surge, right?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Then if you play the Surge and you know your whole deck's going to come on the field... And then, say, you're playing something like Team or Ascendancy, creatures you control have haste, but whenever a creature with power 4 or greater ETBs, you draw a card.
Yep.
So you're doing the whole Primal Surge thing. All these ETB triggers are going to be waiting for Surge to finish resolving. I was like, oh, I got, like, 8-plus draw card triggers.
Yeah.
And then, oh, I win, because Lab Maniac was on the field.
Right.
I like it.
It seems good, guys.
I like it.
Just watch out for that Psych Rift.
Just, you got to play that... This is the, you gotta play that all permanence.
Yeah, all in.
All in.
But if you don't want to go that route, that's okay, I understand. It's a little ballsy. We had a new card, it's similar to Primal Surge. If you don't like just playing permanents for free, if you like just drawing cards, because that feels good, you can play the Great Aurora. 6 green. Each player shuffles their hand and their board into their library, and then draws that many cards. So say you have 7 in your hand, 23 on the board, you shuffle them all up, you draw 30 cards, and then you just throw all of your lands into play. And it's a sorcery, so I'm assuming it's your turn, so then you just get to play everything right back out. You can just put Animar back in your hand, play them out for 3, and then just load up the board with nonsense. And that's really probably just a reset button. I mean, you probably don't even really need that card, but the fact that this deck can be like, oh, things aren't going my way right now, well, sure, I'll just press the big red reset button, and I'll get my entire board back out and start comboing out again.
Seems solid.
It does seem pretty solid. And you have things that, when they enter, you know, like you have like the Wood Elves type effect that... He'll probably be costing a single green mana, and he goes and gets you a land untapped. But you can also play things like Peregrine Drake. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correct. It's 4 and a blue, 2/3 flying, and he ETBs to untap 5 lands. I mean, we have things like Palancron.
Yeah.
But he's kind of expensive. This is definitely the more budget version.
Still seems pretty good.
Yeah, single blue mana to untap 5 lands.
Yeah.
You can just play out a bunch of other nonsense. I mean, that'll combo with your Cloudstone Curio. It'll do a lot of crazy nonsense.
Basically, a lot of Animar things just do things.
Yeah.
I played a thing, and now something else is going to happen.
Yeah.
There's a lot of triggers in this deck.
Yeah. I did a thing, now I get to do a thing.
Yeah.
And it just kind of does that.
And, I mean, worst case scenario... even if combo isn't your thing and you don't like the idea of taking these turns where you're just like doo-doo-doo-doo, or like all permanent primal surge lad me, like even if none of this is up your alley and you're just, I just wanted a big dude who made my big dude cheaper.
Right.
I'm okay with that. You slam your Animar in there. You slam as many mana dorks as you feel is necessary. Mm-hmm. You play those mana dorks. All those mana dorks are now tapping for mana and made your Animar bigger. And now your big guys cost like 2 or 3 mana.
Yeah.
Sure, play Terra Stomper for 2 green.
Yeah.
That actually still seems kind of awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been talking about crazy, like, ooh, these
and that's on the cheap Animar combos, though. Like, we have our personal friend Roy, who plays a fairly expensive Animar that just is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But, like, that's how easy it is to just, like, I win with Animar, like, combo off and just do some crazy stuff. And, yeah, like Jeff said, even if that's not your bag, you can just play a bunch of mana dorks into a bunch of huge Timmy creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got big guys and big Animar.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a couple, like, Rancors or maybe a Serac Dragonclaw who gives all your... Serac Dragonclaw is probably just actually a really good add to this deck because he says creatures you control can't be countered.
Yeah.
And he gives everything else you control trample.
Yeah.
You might just want him in the deck just for value.
Yeah.
Which, on that note, you're probably going to want a Gaia's Herald. Says creature spells can't be countered.
Yep.
Because given the fact a lot of things you do in this deck are going to be creature-based, you don't just want your creatures getting countered.
Yeah.
Seems upsetting.
But,
so yeah, even if you want to build quote-unquote fair Animar, slam them full of cheap dorks and your favorite big creatures in the teamer colors.
Yeah.
And, yeah, still big Animar with protection from the two most relevant destroy creature colors. Like, you can still just have a lot of fun just jamming big dudes.
Gross.
Yeah, it is.
And yeah, I mean... We've been talking about all these, like, crazy interactions and combos and synergies, but, like, let's not forget that you're going to just have a commander that's giant and has protection from things and can probably just kill someone. Like, you don't need 50 Eldrazi. Like, maybe you just need 30 or 40. Like, Animar will just be giant.
It's not unlikely that you could just be, like, swing at you for 21 commander and swing at your other opponent with your horde of creatures. Like,
right. Yes, yes.
Animar's cool because he fights a war on two fronts. He's both, like, kind of creature swarm. Like, I have to be scared of all these huge creatures. And actually just scared of Animar, too.
Yes.
Like, he's weird in that, you know, he lets you play Voltron while also just playing big creatures dot deck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And there's even a few... I made the mistake once. I can say this as a personal suggestion. I accidentally played a Lurin against an Animar deck, and then everything just went to shit. 2 green enchantment.
Yeah. We tried to stop it.
Everybody, I didn't know.
He didn't listen.
I didn't know it was going to happen. 2 green enchantment. Every player can play creatures converted mana cost 3 or less for free as though they had flash. So all of your little elves and everything like that.
And he didn't listen, and he played it.
I played Omnath.
Animar comboed out.
Yeah, I wanted to play Omnath for free with Flash, and then I didn't get a next turn.
No, you did.
It was disgusting. And, you know, if you don't even want to swing at people, if you want to do all of this and just be like, psh, I don't even care, I'm not even going to attack, just play Purphoros. Like,
yeah.
Really? 3 and a green.
Things just work with Animar on the field.
Yeah. 3 and a green, he's a god, you know, he has the whole... God ruling.
I think it's 3 and a red.
Sure. Yeah. That's, well, you know, sure. Okay. And then whenever you have a creature that comes in and deals 2 damage to everybody,
that all seems good with the Ancestral Statue 3-card I win combo.
Yeah.
Animar, I'm going to play this guy a billion infinite times and you're all going to take a billion infinite damage.
Yeah. It seems.
That seems like a 3-card just beat a pod of any size.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, if you don't have the statue, if you have the Cloudstone Curio and 2 creatures with, just keep
like I said, like we said, Animar just does stuff with other stuff.
Yeah.
If it says something about doing things with creatures, it probably is really good in Animar.
Yeah, don't play vanilla things; just play things with words on them. And this doc
that aren't just flavor text.
Well, sure. Or, you know,
I mean, if you really like the flavor text, for sure.
Sure. but yeah, anything you play will do things with other things, and it'll be wonderful. So I think
that does it for us this week, huh?
I think I have to go build this deck.
That's what you said about every single deck.
I know. And I still plan on building all of them.
You're ridiculous.
I still have to show you that Kangi means business.
I bet you do.
All right, guys. I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. I want to say thank you guys for tuning in to listen. You know, I'm sure Tyler wants to say thank you for, you know, tuning in to listen.
Of course.
But, yeah, you can find future episodes of us on MTGCast and iTunes. Those are probably the only places. I can't think of many others you would.
I mean, maybe we'll be big and popular someday and we'll have our own fancy website with its own RSS feed.
Sure, maybe. Maybe. I know how to do none of that.
We can dream.
We can dream. All right.
Fancy living, here we come.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for that website whenever that happens. But until then, you can subscribe on MTGCast and iTunes. You can leave a comment on there. If you want to follow us on Facebook and Twitter so you know when new episodes come out, you can do that. It's the MTG Junk Rares page and at MTG Junk Rares on Twitter. If you want to send us an email, you can email us at mtgjunkrares@gmail.com.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So that's going to wrap it up. Next week, we'll be bringing another commander to this corner. We'll talk about it.
And beating him up. No? Yeah. Or just like...
No, probably just talking about it, right?
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would make my take over the world joke.
Yeah?
But I think I've been disqualified.
All right, well, way to go out on a low note.
Way to make it sad.
Right.
Bah, bah, bah. We'll see you next week, guys.
All right, see you guys.